Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Hard salami's okay, but it's not as good, right? Although, maybe if you're French vanilla, you'd be like hard salami.
You mean the best vanilla?
The fake vanilla.
The real, delicious
the
vanilla?
The fake vanilla.
The creamy vanilla without sand and dirt in it?
It's Mike Shope.
I like that
sand
one.
Sand and dirt. The beans?
Yeah.
The
yes.
specks?
Yes.
Are the problem?
Yeah, it's granular.
The actual what vanilla is? The absolute worst take you've ever had. Because it's on different levels of offensiveness.
I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
And the Bulldog.
Maybe when you first made the ice cream, they were interested in making it, I don't know, good, and added cream to it to make it creamy, like thus ice cream, not ice sand. Ice gravel.
People, what do we even do?
I mean, what are we talking about?
Help.
Police! Help! Police! Help!
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Indirectly, in Bulldog's defense, I literally cannot remember the last time I had ice cream.
Good for you. And I don't need your help defending a perfectly fine. It's not like cream is some foreign substance.
It is, actually. I did some research on cream
recently. It's a perfectly legitimate ingredient to put in, well, like I said there, ice cream to make it creamy and delicious.
I'm definitely not enjoying this because I want to push back hard, but we have a guest. And so I just wanted to say, like, I'm kind of out of touch with ice cream is all.
All right.
And then you went ahead and blasted away again at your argument that that's the better vanilla.
Well,
that really wasn't needed.
You patronized me with in my defense.
And no,
I took objection. I don't need help.
I don't need your help
defending a perfectly sound take.
I was trying to express that really I'm not sure I'm worthy of being an expert on this. Theo Greminger on the Western Hotline.
We're sorry, Theo.
I'm not sorry.
The middle of a marital spat here.
I do not know how I'm going to segue in from the ice cream argument.
Where do you rank Cam Akers? No, we'll get it rolling here. Theo Greminger, player profiler. Theo and I made a trade today. Which
we did.
This is the kind of, thank you. Twice today, trades that make sense that are not scams walked into my inbox. Theo has got a good team. My buddy Louie and I have Zach Charbonnet, who's playing. He's got Pacheco. You know what? You'll speak for yourself. You might need a guy this week. Maybe you happen to like Charbonnet more than we do, I don't know, or Pacheco less, but that's a trade that makes sense because you're not going to have Pacheco for like 2 months, and you found a team that's willing to wait that out.
Yeah, I think it made sense for both teams, and I'm skeptical about Pacheco's involvement this year. You know, we've never seen him come back from this sort of an injury. It's a knee, and I'm very, very bullish on this Ryan Grubb offense in Seattle. I thought we saw some really positive signs last week. Charbonnet is going to do his damage as a receiver. I think he's going to have another strong start this week. And then I worry a little bit about Ken Walker because I think Ken Walker is a guy that we've seen miss multiple times in multiple seasons. The injury bug is sort of already there with him. You know, how many games does he miss? So the trade made sense. And hey, Mike, I never scam you guys. I always send you stuff.
That, you know, I appreciate that because sometimes you want to have some level of respect. You know, somebody who does well at this, you're even a content producer. You don't want somebody just like blind. Oh, maybe they don't know about this injury news that just happened. So let me see if I can rip them off. I mean, that's not how you build.
Yeah. I mean, you're in tune with the NFL. I'm never going to pull a fast one on you like that. But I think just generally for fantasy football, like in today's information age, you don't want to be disrespectful with trade offers, no matter what your league is. And even if you do pull that one fast one off on maybe you know, a less experienced player in your league, you're going to have the rest of the league kind of angry at you, and less people are going to want to make deals with you, and you're going to get fewer trades done over the years. So I always have to like kind of send a decent offer. And it should make sense for both teams when you're doing it.
Ken Walker listed as doubtful for this game. He missed last week. Charbonnet put some numbers up, scored, and the Seahawks have Miami in week 3.
So the Grubb offense, we saw the most completions and the most pass attempts ever for Geno Smith, and we saw both those wide receivers go for 20-plus PPR points. I think we're starting to see, like week 1 was the Ken Walker show, but now we're starting to see like this Ryan Grubb offense, they attempted a pass on nearly 70% of their plays last week. So it's been a sort of a big cultural shift from what we saw in most of the Pete Carroll era. So I'm pretty bullish on the Seattle offense. The Miami game will be interesting, and that one, we'll see how it goes. But Jaxon Smith-Njigba, you've got to be pretty pleased about that outcome.
And Geno's been cooking too, so like that all works. Speaking of that game, I mean, we'll get to as many of these as we can, and certainly want to revisit how we talked about the Bills in the offseason with you, Theo. But Miami, what do you do with Hill, Waddle? I mean, I don't think you want to bench these guys, but no Tua is obviously a huge factor.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're invested in Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and those are guys you're not going to put on your bench. I mean, I suppose there could be a couple of teams out there that potentially have maybe a super-built team where you might have an option over Waddle. But you really can't bench those guys. You just have to temper your expectations. At Skylar Thompson, we don't have much of a sample size at all. The playoff loss against you guys, that was back in 2022. That was like really the last full game we've seen from him. The one bit of sample size that we have from him that was kind of promising was he showed a tendency to check down to running backs in that game. So if that is a static thing for him and he wants to be a check down artist, then it would make sense to try to use dump off passes to Devon Achane, who's playing extremely well. You've got to figure they're going to scheme some things for Tyreek Hill. I think you bump Tyreek Hill down to like a wide receiver 15, wide receiver 18 level player this week. And I think you probably bump Jalen Waddle down to wide receiver 3 land. It's just, it's really tough. You put a lot of draft capital into those guys, but you've got to be realistic with your expectations this week. They're going to keep things conservative. They're going to try to protect Skylar Thompson. And if he falls off the rails, I do think Tyler Huntley behind him, that might be a viable option for week 4.
Agree. I was planning on asking you later if we had time, if you have a favorite tight end this week that's almost definitely someone who was not drafted in someone's home league. But I because we're here, I'm going to say mine would be Jonnu Smith, who caught several passes against the Bills. And Seattle just gave up a huge game to Hunter Henry. So Miami not known for leaning into its tight end at all, but new quarterback and the matchup's good for it, I think.
Yeah, Jonnu had 6 catches last week and 7 targets. He made my sleepers article. It's going to drop tomorrow at Player Profiler. And Jonnu, this could be a guy that they use to kind of protect, Skylar Thompson. He can catch balls around the line of scrimmage. He can do things with yards after the catch. So I think that's a fine sort of dart throw. I think another tight end that might be interesting this week, Luke Musgrave, because Tucker Kraft, it looks like he might miss. He's banged up. So Musgrave might get to play a full-on snap share for Green Bay, but tight end is just sort of a mess for us right now. Unless you drafted Brock Bowers sort of in that later tier, or if you had Trey McBride, you're not feeling great about probably where you took your tight end right now. That whole little segment, Mike, the Evan Engram, David Njoku, Jake Ferguson range of tight end has been disappointing, and obviously – We're not happy about the early returns as fantasy managers from Dalton Kincaid either,
and, or even the top, like Kelsey, Mark Andrews, like so far
Laporta.
It's Laporta too, right? It's been kind of a wasteland.
Kelsey looks toast to me, and I know this is one where he can kind of turn it on, and I think we're going to see a kind of a rapid decline from Travis Kelsey, but for me, Laporta's the interesting one. He's on the field a ton. He's running a lot of routes. They're just not featuring him like they used to. He's certainly been the kind of the biggest loser from the Jameson Williams explosion. Now, they've talked about getting Laporta involved. We saw the slow week from Amon-Ra St. Brown in week 1, fantasy scoring-wise, and then he has the massive week 2. Maybe everything feels right, and Laporta gets a touchdown this week. But I don't know. It's very disappointing, especially considering that in a lot of leagues, Laporta was tiers above a number of these guys. So, like, Mike and I play a lot of tight end premium where we're thinking of all these guys as, like, highly drafted tight ends. But in a lot of home leagues, it was, like, Laporta and Kelsey, and then you waited a little while and took Trey McBride and Kincaid, but there was a noticeable gap between those guys. So that one's really, really hurting people. Laporta one is tilting for sure.
Theo Greminger, our guest, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. Speaking of Detroit, how solid is Jameson Williams for you?
I mean, I think we're there. The guy's 23 years old, and his route participation, his targets, everything about him is screaming that this is not going away. You also have minimal wide receiver competition behind them. So Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, both of those guys are looking, you know, locked in. And I think they can very much coexist this year. But Jameson, we never saw games from him last year where he even played like 70% of the snaps. Now we're seeing it every game where he's playing like 80% plus. And he's just so explosive. He's finally starting to figure it out. You've had so many issues with him, but he was the number 12 overall pick, and this is a guy that the organization put a lot into. They had extremely high hopes for, and now their patience is being rewarded. And, Mike, we saw it last year, Nico Collins' year three breakout, and this is one where this used to happen all the time in fantasy football, where these guys would get to year three, they would feel acclimated to the NFL, and they would break out. Now it's sort of been, if we don't see guys doing it as rookies, then we worry about them. We want it right away. But this year, you've seen it again. Rashid Shaheed and Jameson Williams, both year three wide receivers, and everything seems to be sort of clicking for them, and their usage is strong. I mean, we could have another year where there's two more year three breakouts and both those guys finish like inside of the top.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
24 scores at the wide receiver position.
It's year two only for him, but Quentin Johnston?
So this is one that's interesting. I wrote him up in the waiver wire column this week, and I give all sorts of warnings with this one. And I had a couple people DMing me and talking to me about like how much fab to spend on him. This one could end up burning me, but this is a guy where I think he's benefiting from a lack of tight end quality, and I think he's going to end up becoming like the red zone target. We've seen back-to-back weeks where his target percentage is strong. His target share was very, very strong this past week. It was like 30%. It's just such a low-volume pass attack that I think he's sort of capped a little bit. But heading into this week, based on his role, based on the valuable end zone targets he's going to get, and based on his target share, I think Quentin Johnston is like a wide receiver three. In deeper formats, I think he's a guy that you're probably going to get in the lineup and see where this goes. And he's a guy where if you don't trust him yet, you still want to stash him on your bench. First round pick, every now and then you get these guys that do absolutely nothing and then have a strong year two. It feels a little bit like DJ Shark's second year, where he had that like out of nowhere wide receiver two year. Quentin Johnston was sort of a punchline player last year, where it looked like this mega bust, but he certainly fried Harbaugh in that TCU win over Michigan in that bowl upset a few years back in the college football playoffs. And there was a little bit of talk about, like, will Harbaugh look to use him? Will that be heavy on his mind? I'm not sure about that, but I think it's just Quentin Johnston. There's a lack of quality around him. He's got a clear role. And besides Ladd McConkey, this is maybe the only wide receiver in L.A. that we'd be interested in. And skill position-wise, there hasn't been a whole lot of receptions for the running backs. This is just a run-heavy scheme, and I think we're there. Wide receiver three, sort of a capped upside, but I'm there with Quentin Johnston. Adam, this week.
All the talk this week, really in the first 2 weeks of the season, Theo, has been about offense. Where's the passing game gone? And all we've got here are Baker Mayfield and Derek Carr leading the league with 5 touchdown passes through 2 games. Rodgers now has 5 after a couple last night in their team's 3rd game. How ready to buy in on anybody, Tampa or New Orleans, are you?
Well, with Baker Mayfield, I talked about him a little bit in the preseason on my podcast where everybody, one of the questions was sort of like, if we're going to bet on one of these low-end QB2s to finish as a QB1, who would it be? And Baker was always kind of thrown into that lot where the guy finished as a QB1 last year. And he's got the weapons, and the scheme looks very strong. This offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, has moved Chris Godwin back into the slot. Godwin's playing the slot 65% of the time. He's getting 35% of the air yard share. So that's like a Cooper Kupp-like stat, Cooper Kupp-like usage. And Godwin's been a huge beneficiary. Mike Evans, we already saw sort of the connection he had with Baker Mayfield. And Baker just looks super comfortable. This is like a really wonderful career arc for a guy that we sort of left for dead. He had the little mini stint with the Rams. And then he ends up in Tampa Bay, and last year finishes as a QB1. Now it's like you've got confident Baker. That drive with the 2 rushes last week to get that win against Detroit was super significant. He had back-to-back 11-yard runs, and that first 11-yard run, like, people remember the touchdown, but the first one was he evades pressure, and he puts on the nastiest juke of the entire weekend. And he just looks so comfortable out there. So I think Baker, we can kind of temper our expectations. He's not going to be anywhere near QB1 at the end of the year. But I think Baker can be a QB1, a top 12 finisher. And he just looks at ease in this offense. So that he's looks good. And then Derek Carr, this Clint Kubiak scheme, pretty much any podcast you listen to this week, there's at least 25% of it just praising Clint Kubiak. But he deserves it. They're averaging 45.5 points per game. They're favored over the Philadelphia Eagles this week. Derek Carr, Mike, don't the vibes with Derek Carr right now sort of feel a little bit like 2022 Geno Smith, where it was a guy that sort of came out of nowhere ADP-wise. We started thinking it would tail off, and then he just finishes as a QB1. And Geno, I think that year was like QB6. But Derek Carr has really strong offensive line play right now, which is significant. And the scheme is super interesting. They're doing things that other teams in the NFL just are not doing. They're keeping in extra blockers. They're using fullbacks and extra tight ends to create this pocket for him. And then they're only sending 2 wide receivers downfield, but it's Olave and Shaheed. And then they're leaking Alvin Kamara out on easy connections for him. So it's a very interesting scheme, and it's innovative. So for me, I don't know. I think this is going to be an interesting one to kind of see where Derek Carr goes. But every year we get one of these guys that comes out of nowhere and finishes as a QB1. 2 seasons ago we had it with Geno. Last year we had it with Sam Howell, and we had it with Baker Mayfield. So Derek Carr finishing as a QB1, I'm not putting anything out there. They're both playing very well. They've got the weapons. They've got the scheme.
Goff in a way in his turn when he got to Detroit as well.
Oh, that's a great call, Mike. Yeah, you know, for sure. That was that one as well.
Theo, we're getting late here. The Bills. You and I have talked. We've talked numerous times about James Cook, Dalton Kincaid. Right now, I mean, Cook is hitting. He's even getting goal line carries. And Kincaid is still kind of nowhere, fantasy-wise at least. What's your attitude about each guy going forward?
You got to feel really good about James Cook. He's averaged 17.5 points per game since Joe Brady took over, and that's dating back to last season. That's a pretty big sample size, and they're giving him the carries inside the 10-yard line, where last year he had only 2 touchdowns. Seemed sort of like a positive touchdown regression guy, but you guys are near the action there, a lot closer than I am, but all the little drumbeats seem to be saying that Josh Allen wants to run a little bit less. We saw him in week 1 as like a weapon of mass destruction, Josh Allen. But then last week, in a blowout win, Josh Allen only gives you like 10 fantasy points. And that's because some of those touchdowns are going to James Cook. It's a very running back centric offense. I think my big takeaway for fantasy managers watching the Buffalo Bills is Ray Davis needs to be rostered on every single fantasy team. I know Ty Johnson caught the touchdown, but Ray Davis out-touched him like 10-2. And if this role exists and James Cook happens to miss some time, then Ray Davis could be a guy that you put in your lineup and get like top 10 running back production out of. I've been impressed with how he looks on a per-touch basis. And then Kincaid, the jury's still out here for me. I think this is one where it's been extremely frustrating, the early usage, but we saw it last year with kind of where he was at, where the season started out slowly, and then for whatever reason he goes into that that stretch of games where he was highly effective for fantasy. Like you said, the tight end position is just a scrap heap right now, and Kincaid, at least we can bet on the talent. If we get to these next 2 weeks are going to be very tilting for Dalton Kincaid, but I on the teams that I have him for fantasy, I'm absolutely still using him this week. I think that right now, if you start doing your rankings and you say where a guy's going to finish, you're still going to end up having Kincaid somewhere around that tight end 10 through 12 range. It's really hard to go much lower with him. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to start Zach Ertz over Dalton Kincaid, Brenton Strange over Dalton Kincaid? It's disappointing because we're not seeing like this Travis Kelce-like role for him. And I think we've got to temper expectations. I don't think he's going to challenge for tight end one overall anymore. That ship has sailed. But I do think he could be an effective starter for you. And there's going to be games where the Bills are going to have to lean on him. It seemed like the first game they were trying to double-team Kincaid. And then that Miami game, it just sort of – they didn't really need to use him. So jury's still out of how Buffalo will use him for the entire season. But I'll maintain some hope. But my expectations are slightly tempered.
I wonder how they might have used him if that game hadn't gotten as sideways as it got. Because yeah. They did try to establish him parallel to the line of scrimmage very early in the game, and it worked all right. I mean, he got yards after the catch there, and I wonder if that was to set up something else down the field that they ended up never having to pivot to because, again, the game was on cruise control.
Yeah, it was just such a comfortable game for them. This one could also be comfortable, though. Jacksonville looks like an absolute mess, and I think Buffalo's going to handle them this weekend. So that's just my gut feel. So I don't know if we'll have to see that again. I think we could see more of the same where the running game is very effective against Jacksonville. And the way this Jacksonville offense is sort of stuck in the mud, I think the Buffalo defense is going to be taking care of business. So I don't know. This one's an interesting one. Isn't Jacksonville the one where – correct me if I'm wrong, they had a big upset win over Buffalo a few years back as a big underdog. Was that Jacksonville, Mike?
Yes.
9-6
yes.
In Jacksonville with Urban Meyer as the Jacksonville coach.
They also beat the Bills last year.
And that was like one of the biggest upsets of the season, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything can happen on an NFL Sunday. But for me, I just think Buffalo handles them. I think those teams are heading in opposite directions right now.
Came close to starting Hunter Henry over Kincaid. Last night, Henry went 2-for-9. So far, I'm glad I didn't.
you run pure with your lineup decisions continually,
yeah,
Mike.
Sure.
And this is another flex on that right on the air.
I'm not having my worst year so far, but it's very early. Theo Greminger, player profiler, thanks for the time. As always, Theo, good luck this weekend.
Appreciate that. Have a great weekend, guys.
All right. Theo Greminger on the West Her Hotline. If you're serious about fantasy football and you go looking for content, you can't avoid Theo. He is one of the hardest workers out there. He's got a hand in lots of different shows and always writing, you know, really impressive and good advice. We've got an hour before Sal joins us. Open lines at 803-0550. What are you sensing Monday night? We've talked all week about offensive trends in the league. It's been really interesting. Maybe you've got a theory or a point you want to make. Bring it to us. Bulldog will tell you if it's good.
But what am I going to do?
Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after sports. This is WGR. No.